It's time to step into the Coming Out Lounge, a cool, safe space to be true to your sexual self, with your host, Rick Clemens. Rick has helped hundreds of people come out of the closet, and now each week he's bringing you cool insights for loving and accepting yourself, boosting your self-confidence, and living a guilt-free, purpose-filled life on the other side of the closet doors. Cuddle up with yourself and get ready for heartwarming coming out stories, ideas for living authentically, and tips for being fully self-expressed. Now here's your host, Coming Out Coach Rick.
Hey, 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 closet busters and closet dwellers. It is time once again for the Coming Out Lounge. And today we're going to go to the playground, you know, because from baseball to ballet, from, I don't know, playing video games to those theater productions, and even those awkward, weird moments where we used to stand on the playground going, oh, am I going to be picked first or am I going to be picked last? Even from those A to Fs that we experienced on our report cards, we received messages that impacted the playgrounds of our lives. And these messages impact our spiritual ability to accept who we are and to thrive in the possibilities of who we're meant to be. But for some reason, at these deepest levels, regardless of the messages and where they stem from, I want you to believe that you have the strength to fully be responsible for living an empowered life, to being fully expressed, and to fully loving yourself. And today I brought a friend of mine in. His name is Chris Tompkins, who has taken this beautiful concept of messages from the playground and is crafting them into thought-provoking, well, really journeys as a speaker and a teacher and a writer, and as a spiritual counselor. He's taking people on these journeys back through the playgrounds and beyond as he helps advocate in the LGBT community. And he's truly on a mission of healing the planet of all its homophobic ailments before they even need the prescription. And I can tell you, we're going to have a really powerful conversation today because he's a beautiful, powerful man, and he's truly committed to helping others go from the messages on the playground into a beautiful spiritual place of loving and caring for themselves and others. So it's time to welcome my friend Chris to the podcast. Hey, Chris, thanks for being here, man.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Rick.
I've been looking forward to this. So for those that are listening, Chris and I only met a few months ago, but when we did, there was definitely this interesting connection that we felt. And then as we've had a couple of meals together and broke bread together and conversations, we just realized there's a lot of commonality in belief and work that we're doing. So let's kind of start with what brought you to this, Chris. I know this being in the spiritual work and doing this kind of work, it's just been in the last few years that you really stepped into this. So take the listeners a little bit on to how you got into this.
Yeah, well, thank you. I think my journey, after I came out of the closet, I really dove into advocacy work and got really involved in LGBT advocacy work with HRC and different organizations. And then that actually brought me out to, I'm from Arizona, and that brought me out to Los Angeles to work for GLAAD, the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation. I think after a little while, I realized like I was still feeling some of the same things that I felt when I was still in the closet. And I didn't quite understand really what was going on. And so after leaving GLAAD, I kind of embarked on my own journey. And a few years later, I came across this book called You Can Heal Your Life,
yeah,
by Louise Hay. And I was at the library waiting for a friend. And I had already kind of started to dabble down the spiritual path. I mean, I think our whole lives is a spiritual journey, but there's a point where you become consciously aware that you're on it. And so I had kind of started to dabble and started going to the lectures. And so when I came across this book, it seemed really old. And so I remember flipping through it and really liked what I was reading. And I remember I happened to come across this page in the very back of the book, and it was talking about gay men. And she did a lot of work, Louise Hay. I don't know how many of your listeners or if you're familiar with Louise Hay, but she did a lot of work with the gay men in the 80s when the AIDS epidemic hit.
And yeah, she was a huge influence in that movement.
She was. And it was so interesting is because I had done so much LGBT advocacy work with, you know, big organizations, and I never even knew who Louise Hay was. Mm-hmm. And I consider her now part of LGBT history for sure. Yeah. But I didn't know about her. And so when I was reading this book and I came across this page and she was talking about gay men specifically, I remember thinking what I was reading was relevant to right now. Like, I remember thinking what she's talking about is like modern, but the book seemed old. It was a used copy. Yep. So I remember I flipped to the front of the book and it said 1984. Mm. And I had this huge rush of like, oh my gosh, everything that I had intuitively felt and all the outside work I was doing, it made sense that, oh, there's still a lot of inner work that needs to be done. And so that kind of propelled me on a path of an inward path of really doing a lot of healing. And, you know, I had never really, I don't know when I was trying to think about it the other day when I first learned of internalized homophobia, like when I first heard that term.
Right.
But, you know, you so beautifully described in the introduction messages from the playground, but for the longest time, I had always talked to people, even in my advocacy work, I would always talk to people about, you know, we all played on the same playground, I used to say. Like, you know, we all played on the same playground. And no matter who you are or where you come from, we all, you know, played on the same playground. And that speaks to the LGBT community too. And so, you know, we heard those messages, we heard those things just as much as the other people who aren't LGBT. And so I think that there's this part of ourselves that we don't, unless you go to therapy or you're a therapist or you read something about internalized homophobia, it's something that's not really talked about.
Yeah.
And it's directly linked to, I think, self-love, which is ultimately where we stand in our power, you know, and you know, because if you're really going to stand in front of someone and ask them to treat you equal, but there's a part of you that doesn't believe that you deserve it.
Right.
The Heal Your Life book really kind of propelled me on an inward journey, which eventually has turned outward. And so now I'm on this path of sharing that inward work outwardly to help create change.
You know, this internalized homophobia, we've talked about it a few times probably throughout the history of the Coming Out Lounge, but it's not something we've ever really delved deeply into. And I think it's an important conversation to have because given where we are as a country right now, and I'm specifically for those listeners outside of the U.S., I know a lot of you are looking in at the United States and the new Trump administration going, okay, what's really going on? What's going to happen here? Much of this fear and angst and everything comes from a lot of internalized stuff that's just now coming to the surface. And in the same way, I compare it to the internalized homophobia that many of us that have been in the closet when we come out, we don't realize we're harboring this stuff because, as Chris so beautifully said, we're all playing on the same playground. And sometimes because we're on the same playground, those things that make us different get lost. And then suddenly, as LGBTQ individuals, when we come out, we don't realize that there's actually some stuff about our own community that we're not going to get or we're going to look down our nose at. And this is human nature stuff. But what surprises me in my own homophobia showed up very early in my journey out of the closet was how much loathing I felt towards some people in our community. And then I realized aspects of that loathing was what I just hated about myself.
Right. Well, if you look at it from a, you know, if you want to get into like metaphysics or spirituality and transfer what you know in spirituality and metaphysics into this conversation, you know, everything's energy.
Yes.
Everything's energy. And feelings are energy. It's a vibration. And energy doesn't go anywhere. It only can change form.
Yes.
And so that shame that you feel as a child that you internalize, the things that you internalize, and it's not just about homophobia, but it's whatever you internalize, but specifically to the LGBT community about who we are, we internalize those things, and that's energy. And that shame is energy. And so you can stuff it and you can hide it. And, you know, a lot of people who have been in the closet are really good at hiding things, but it doesn't change form unless you consciously work on it.
Absolutely.
You know, you have to bring the subconscious into the conscious. And then once it's in the conscious, that's where you can really start to, you know, make some groundwork as far as, okay, this is a choice. I could choose this, right? What is this thought about? Where did this come from? But until it's conscious, it's unconscious. Then when it's unconscious, you don't even realize it.
Right. And I know for me, one of the things that came up in my unconscious, and so I'm going to go back. This does come from my own version of messages from the playground. I was raised Seventh-day Adventist, and I actually never attended public school until I was a junior in college. I was always in a Seventh-day Adventist school of some sort, from elementary to, you know, high school to first 2 years of college. And because the messages that I received was that first homosexuals were, you know, wrong, they were bad, they were evil, they were sinners. And secondarily, that anybody who didn't believe by the foundations and the belief systems of the Seventh-day Adventist religion were also not good people. So 36 years old, come out of the closet, have battled all this stuff for all those years. And then I finally start to ingratiate into the community. And one of the first things that I got faced with was the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, along with being introduced to the leather community. Not because I was a leather guy, but I just got exposed to it. And then finding out that both of those communities, the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, as well as a lot of people that are in the leather community, are very spiritual people. Mm-hmm. And that started literally with my mind. It's like, wait, you can't be spiritual. You can't have any of this if this is what you are. But what was so interesting for me as I began to unpack that was it was a combination of, wait, these people are expressing themselves, which is no different than me expressing myself as a man, as a gay man. They were expressing themselves in something that they're enjoy, how they like to be in life. But I wasn't making room for them to be anything but that. There was no room for them to be spiritual, let alone some of them are very religious people too. And so I saw the messages from my playground being, they can't be this way because they're not Seventh-day Adventists. Oh, and on top of that, they can be gay, but they have to be gay this way like I am. And it wasn't until I had an incident, and many listeners have heard this, in a bar myself where somebody called me a breeder, because I had actually had biological children, that all of this began to unpack for me. And I realized how my own homophobia was showing up in so many ways that, as you said, Chris, I had to go dive in and start to look at this so that I could then outwardly begin to say, wait, we need to step back and make these moves. It sounds like it's been a very powerful journey for you in a very similar way of starting to really step into your own essence and go, what is it I need to unpack?
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's a great example. And I think even if you want to get even really like just basic, like super, you know, basic is we learn, our unconscious, we don't even really realize how powerful our subconscious mind is, you know, and I tell people it's like, our subconscious controls 95% of our lives are operated by our subconscious, which, you know, it's like you could pretty much say beliefs. Yep. You know, your conscious mind is your thinking, which is just 5%. So, right. You know, you and I are consciously, we made a time to have this call and we're consciously meeting, but subconsciously, you know, you are bringing all of your beliefs and I'm bringing all of my beliefs, and those beliefs formulate our choices, our decisions. It's kind of like if you watch a movie, the background music that you hear in the movie, the soundtrack, or, you know, just the subtle music that's playing, it's not enough to take away from the movie. You could still see the movie and watch what's going on, but you can hear it in the background.
Right.
And it's just constantly going. And, you know, just to give you a real like similar example, but I teach with kids and I work with a lot of kids who are you know, seventh grade, eighth grade, you know, high school. And one of the classes that we teach is about our beliefs. And so we have the kids fill out just basic beliefs about what they have about money, boys, girls, school, just general kind of basic things. And I always pick money to talk to, like, as an example. Like, I'll go around the room and say, okay, what do people write about money? Mm-hmm. And no matter where I go, if I'm teaching a class in, doesn't matter the neighborhood, doesn't matter the school, it doesn't matter. There's always someone who writes money is the root of all evil. Mm-hmm. And I talk to them and, you know, for example, this one little boy a few weeks ago, he seventh grade. So about 12 years old, I think, wrote money is the root of all evil. And so I looked at him and I go, you really believe that money is the root of all evil? That, like, that's your belief? And he was like, yeah. And I was like, do you have a job? And he was like, no. And I'm like, have you ever worked? And he's like, no. I'm thinking, okay, that's probably, you know, not your belief. Like, that came from somewhere. And it's a biblical term. Mm-hmm. It comes from the Bible. And it's actually not even the full term. It's the love of money is the root of all evil. Mm-hmm. And, but people, you know, just the subconscious, we get these kind of messages that are told and often over and over that they get ingrained in us. And so, you know, I talk to kids about, if you have a belief that money is the root of all evil, do you think that you're ever going to want to make money? Consciously, you want to have a job, but unconsciously, you're going to have a block that prevents you because you think it's evil.
Right.
That has to do with, you know, money and just general. But if you bring that into sexuality and gender, mm-hmm. we have those same beliefs.
Yes.
And, you know, where I live, my apartment, I always share this story because I think it's so simple, but it's very telling. I share a fence with preschool. And so I see a lot of the kids are playing, you know, and so I was going to my car, and last year I used to have long hair and I used to wear my hair in a man bun. Mm-hmm. And I was going to the trunk of my car, and this little girl ran up to the fence and she was like, hey. And I was like, hey. I looked over. And she's like, what's your name? And I go, Chris. And she goes, I'm Vanessa. And I'm like, hi, Vanessa. She goes, are you a boy? And I'm like, yeah, I'm a boy. And then some of her friends came over and they just continue to play. And that's the thing with kids. So preschool. So she's probably about, I think, between 5 and 7.
Right.
If I have my age. And so I could almost guarantee you that her parents never sat her down specifically and said, Vanessa, boys have short hair and girls have long hair or buns. But it's just something that she picked up. And so here she sees this seemingly looks like a man, but has a bun. So she just asked that question. And that's very simple and very basic. That's where we get our messages as mm-hmm. as children, and those formulate our beliefs. And so as a gay man, even though I'm openly gay and out, I picked up specific messages that unless I really explore and, like you mentioned, unpack, then those affect my life and my experience of the LGBT community.
I think it's so fascinating when we can pinpoint, that's such a beautiful story. It's something so simple will have impact down the road, and we may never know, because who knows when you'll ever meet that little girl or anything, but in some way, that moment will have a huge impact on her for how she perceives men and men's hair, and then that when she sees somebody in a bun, it will always have an impact. One of the most, and it's interesting that you brought that up, because one of the most hurtful things that happened to me my freshman year in high school, we had just moved from Colorado to Arkansas because there happened to be a Seventh-day Adventist high school in Arkansas, and it happened to also be the one that my father went to. And we came from Colorado, but we actually had only been in Colorado a few years from California. So my parents were young, kind of hippies. And so we get to Arkansas and, you know, first off, people started asking us where we were from. It's like, well, Colorado, but born and raised in California. And that immediately started to put them off. You guys are way too progressive. Then because, you know, we weren't the wealthiest people. You know, we were kind of looked down on our noses and all this sort of stuff. And we had in our high school this tradition of week of prayer, which was a week long. You know, every evening there was gatherings at the church and, you know, spiritual stuff, not like we're constantly on our knees praying, but they call it week of prayer. And you just come together, you worship each night and all this sort of stuff. And the principal pulled me aside and told me, Christian boys do not wear their hair below their collar. And I was devastated because that sent the signal that I wasn't a Christian boy. And I know throughout my life since then why certain things will trigger me and why certain things will always bring me back to that moment. And why now when I see a man with long hair, I have kind of a duality of a reaction. In one way, if it's a man that's really strikes me, there's an allure to the long hair. In another way, if it's someone that doesn't strike me, it's almost like, go get your haircut. But it's all stems, and I know this because, again, I've done a lot of work of, like, where do these things come from? And especially as a coach, you know, I go into this stuff quite a bit. But I realized that all stemmed from that one interaction.
Right. Well, and what you just said is so beautiful, because that's the goal, really, is not to – I think the term internalized homophobia, you know, if you're familiar with Brené Brown, Dr. Brené Brown.
Yep.
She's wonderful, and she talks a lot about shame, and she says that either three things happen when we talk about shame, and you could just, and you could replace shame with internalized homophobia. It's the same thing, internalized homophobia, shame. And so what I find when I talk about internalized homophobia is either three things happen, which Brené Brown talks about. She says either three things happen when you talk about shame. You either, people either shut down, change the subject, or deny that they have it.
Yes.
And so I think that a lot of this conversation, we get stuck with people shutting down, changing the subject, or denying that we have it. Yeah. And so what you just so beautifully shared is exactly what I'm really, my hope is to have these conversations and to let people know it takes courage to really, what you just mentioned about where does it come from, and not deny it, not judge it, not be fearful of it, but to look at it and embrace it. You know, I remember a good friend of mine, she is a Lutheran minister. She was trained as a Lutheran minister, and she would help people with their last rites. So she would go to hospitals and sit with people as far as, you know, when they were dying. And she told me about this spiritual inventory that she would assess people with, and like how she would know how to, you know, sit with them and be able to provide them with guidance.
Right.
And she ranked, if you had a high sense of pride, you were considered spiritually unwell. If you ranked high on humility, you were considered spiritually well.
Wow.
And that really struck me because, you know, it takes a lot of humility to be able to acknowledge your shame. It takes a lot of humility to be able to acknowledge your internalized homophobia. And I think it's honorable to do that. And I think that the message that we get, you know, especially in the LGBT community, is, you know, to be proud and pride. And yes, there is strength in that for sure. And there's strength in honoring the messages that you heard growing up so that you could bring them into your conscious and heal them and change that energy, transform that energy.
Yeah. I think it's powerful too, to also look at it from the perspective of, but there's also this beautiful space of pride to be able to be humble. If you can be humble, there's some pride in that. Some people can't be humble. But when you can allow yourself to go, I'm going to let humility overtake me and let that be my guiding force, so to speak, then so these are just such interesting, you know, little nuances to how we view and what we see, that when we let ourselves truly be human and we allow each other to, like, express things, which is a big part of the challenge I feel like we're having right now in our world, then we find ourselves all being able to be a little more humble about, okay, that's their perception. This is their perspective. And we can take pride in the fact that we've allowed someone else to be that.
You right.
know, it's really beautiful. And I agree with you. You know, so many people get up in arms about gay pride and why isn't there a straight pride? And, you know, at times I just want to say, then have a straight pride. Go for it. But you already have the dominance in the world. This right. is about being able to say there's nothing shameful about being LGBTQ, no different than there's anything shameful about being Black or shameful about being Asian or Muslim. It's these are prideful things. And
right.
I think these are the places where we cross a lot of lines of not respecting and loving one another in a way that we should.
Right. Well, I think what, you know, you just said, I think that the importance of pride and the importance of any marginalized community who shows up is visibility. And so I think that pride events, you know, are so important because they show visibility. But I think that what I'm referring to is on an energetic level,
yeah.
there's a difference between, you know, if you meet someone who is overcompensating for what they don't truly feel about themselves.
Yes.
That comes across.
Yes, it does.
And that's what I'm referring to. I'm not mm-hmm. referring to, you know, visibility and the importance of, you know, we live in a heteronormative world. And so the importance of pride is that, you know, we really show ourselves and, yeah. and really take that stance and stand in power. And that's very important. And also it's important to be able to love ourselves. And I think in order to really truly love ourselves and access the depth of that, we have to be humble to acknowledge what it was that we didn't love.
Yes. That's really beautiful said, Chris.
Yeah. Because thank
that
you.
That is the piece of it. This humility and humbleness to step forth and say, this is the part of me I wasn't loving because I was ashamed. I felt guilt around it.
Right.
That to me is the pure essence of why pride can be so beautiful. When
right.
you cross over into that other arena, so to speak, that's when the magic happens. And, you know, going back to Brené Brown, this is why I love her use of, you know, I don't remember exactly how she says it, but until you're ready to come into the arena with me, I really don't have time to listen to you, you know. You have to have been in that arena with someone and understand how they have been in there before you can make those judgments. And I think this is where the power of the work that you're doing and coming from that place of, you know, the messages start from the playground or the home. But I love that you're using the metaphor of the playground because it truly is where everything starts.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know who the psychologist is, but he says that we're just basically, there's this psychologist, he says basically that all adults are just walking around childhood belief systems.
Yes.
You know, and so our formative years are really our childhood, our developmental years. And the messages from the playground is going back to Brené Brown again, she says, come up with another term. And so I think that, you know, talking about internalized homophobia, mm-hmm. depending on what community you're in, it can block or stop conversations. And so I think in order to really have conversations, you have to come up with phrases or mm-hmm. words that people can connect to and that you can be able to dialogue with. And that's so important is dialogue. And so messages from the playground, I think that we can all relate to being children yes. and playing on the playground. And it really is a metaphor for the mind. Mm-hmm. The playground is the mind.
Absolutely.
And that's where we pick up the messages, which mm-hmm. are the subconscious.
Yes.
And those subconscious beliefs live in our mind. Mm-hmm. So that's messages from the playground, really.
Absolutely. You know, as you were saying, other ways to say things, I remember, and I don't think it was Brené Brown, but it was someone, maybe it was Gabby Bernstein, or maybe it wasn't even anybody of that well, you know, not that well known, but I remember somebody saying, you know, you can look at internalized homophobia or you can call it internalized shamophobia or internalized prideophobia or internalized loveophobia. Whatever we're phobic to towards ourselves or another group is what we need to look at within ourselves. If you don't love yourself, then when you're looking at other people and bashing them, there's an essence that you're throwing yourself out there under the proverbial bus, so to speak.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, and I'll share this. This is a really beautiful, this really moved me. I went to Outfest, the Los Angeles Gay and Lesbian Film Festival. Wonderful, amazing organization. But I went to a documentary film that they showed a few months ago, and it was about the first country western gay singer. And I forget his name and I forget the album, but it was a beautiful short documentary, like 15 minutes long, about his story. And I remember in the documentary, he was describing his childhood, and he's an older man. This album came out in like the 60s. It was the first country western gay album. And so he was talking about this story, describing this story of when he was in high school. He knew that he was gay. He was in the closet. But he loved the theater, and he was in a play. And he was so excited because he got to perform in this particular play and dress up as a woman. Mm. And he loved putting on the dress, and he described it. And so one day after school, they were rehearsing, and he was leaving rehearsal, and he didn't know his dad was picking him up from school. So he was walking down the hallway, and he saw his dad at the other end, and he froze and like was like, oh, shit, and like jumped and hid. And he changed and then walked out to the front of the school, got in the truck, and they were driving home. And his dad, this was like in rural Kansas, and they were driving home, and his dad goes, you know, son, I saw someone who looked like you today, but they were in women's clothes. And his son sat there like froze, like couldn't believe that his dad was even bringing it up.
Wow.
And he goes, you know what, son, if that was you, be that, but don't sneak. Because if you sneak, it'll harm your immortal soul.
Yeah.
And that's this whole conversation really is about internalized homophobia, is that when we hide, we know, our soul knows. And that's the goal, is to access the soul and to honor the soul and do the soul work and love ourselves at a soul level.
Wow. I think that's a beautiful place for us to start to wrap this up, Chris. You've been so wonderful in sharing your world and your life and your views and the work that you're doing. If you were to leave the listeners with one nugget of wisdom, piece of advice, whatever we want to call it, that could help someone who's struggling with being themselves or struggling with the messages from the playground, what would you like to leave the listeners with?
To really just love yourselves from the inside out. And all you need is just a little willingness, you know, to ask yourself, you know, what am I willing to heal more of? Mm-hmm. Because it's the inner work that really directly impacts the work that we're able to do in the world. Mm-hmm. And especially as it pertains to the LGBT community right now, with everything that's going on, I think that the most powerful we can be is from inward outwardly.
I agree 100%. 100%. So if someone wants to see more about the work you're doing, what's a good place to find you? What's your website, for instance?
It is www.aroadtriptolove.com, all one word.
And for those of you listening, of course, you know that we always put up these websites, Twitters, Facebooks, Instagrams, wherever anybody that's been on the podcast. And also, if you're in the Southern California area, Chris is going to be doing a talk about the messages from the playground at a TEDx at Long Beach, at Cal State Long Beach, coming up April the 9th. So if you're interested in attending and hearing more about this and seeing Chris do his thing, I encourage you to get over there and get some tickets as soon as you can or as soon as they go on sale. So excited for you doing that, man. I know you and I have talked a lot about that, and I can't wait to see you in action there as well. So
yes, thank you.
So thanks for being here, man, and sharing yourself. And with that, we're going to wrap up another episode of the Coming Out Lounge. And as always, just go out there, be yourself. Don't be afraid. Step out, step up, and step into living your truth, because every one of us needs to spend more time escaping our bullshit, exploring our failures, and elevating our true self-expression. Until next time, I'm Rick Clemens, the Coming Out Coach, and we will catch you in just a few days once again on the Coming Out Lounge. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.
Hey, closet dwellers and coming out lounge listeners. I wanted to invite you to check something out. You know, for all the years that I've been a coming out coach, one thing I've learned is sometimes people come to do the work with me and they only need a little bit of help to get over something very particular and very important to them. It could be reconciling their religion and sexuality. Maybe it's learning how to have the difficult conversations where they say, I'm gay. Possibly it could be, oh my God, I'm out of the closet, but now how do I do this same-sex dating and mating sort of thing? Well, what I can tell you is throughout the years, there are common things that show up over and over and over again. And what I've heard most from my clients and listeners of the podcast is, I want a way to work with you just on these particular subjects. Yay, I am so excited because I've taken the action and I've made this possible. So how do you find out about these particular programs? You go to thecomingoutcoach.com, or if you're on the show page right now listening to the podcast or have just listened to the podcast, over to the right-hand side of the podcast description or anything is an icon that says one-on-one coaching sessions. Click on that button. You'll be taken to a page that describes each of the different 9 sessions I'm offering. They are one-on-one sessions that we can do via phone, Skype, or even FaceTime. They're very action-oriented. We go right to the topic that you want to talk about. And each of these sessions also includes a copy of my book, Frankly, My Dear, I'm Gay. So what more could you ask for? You get me for 90 minutes devoted to you, plus my book. So go check it out. See if there's something that could help you as you step out, step up, and step in to living your powerful truth. Take care. I'm Rick Clemons, the Coming Out Coach. I look forward to working with you.
You've just experienced the Coming Out Lounge. Go online to www.comingoutlounge.com to learn more. And tune in again next week for more stories and tips for being true to yourself.